How is it possible for a man who shares the common guilt of all humankind to also claim to be innocent, as Job did? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide author. We continue our series on the book of Job. My conversation partners are again Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Jen Ogden, Associate Pastor of the Walla Walla University Church. All right, let me toss that out. How can you be guilty as a human being, but claim to be innocent as Job did? Is this fair game?
I'm throwing it at Jen.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I'll catch it.
Okay.
I think that Job isn't claiming that he is a perfect person and that he's never done anything wrong. I think he's saying that there's nothing to instigate the situation in which he finds himself, that he has not sinned grievously against God or against his fellow man, and that the situation that he's in, the consequences that he is experiencing, he doesn't deserve, that they are undeserved and unmerited. You know, he understands that there is consequence to behavior, but he's saying, I didn't do those things that would merit something like this. So
I like your explanation and the distinction you make. Yeah, I think Job is focused on the events that are immediate, not on the grand situation of humankind.
Mm. Now, it's interesting, at the beginning of the book, this is what God says about Job. Have you considered my servant Job? Now, this is to Satan. There is no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright. Now, the NIV is probably correct saying blameless rather than perfect, but the KJV says perfect and upright. A man who fears God and shuns evil. So God was not afraid at that point to declare Job to be blameless.
But who is Job professing his innocence to, or his blamelessness? It's not to God, it's to his friends first, isn't it?
Well, when he gets into it, yeah, and of course he's talking to God and to his friends and to himself. I mean, he just thrashes about incredibly. If I were writing the whole official study guide, I might take a different approach. But if you analyze each of Job's response, there are a whole bunch of places where he says, God has, he's been beating up on me. He's got his swords on me. He's got his spear on me. Yeah. And yet, at the same time, he will go on and say, but God won't talk to me. You know, I can't get anybody to talk to me. You know? So it's really quite an amazing situation.
So how is it possible for a man who shares the common guilt of humankind to proclaim blamelessness? It's because in a particular circumstance, he is blameless.
That's right.
Yeah.
He is not guilty of this particular act.
Yeah.
Now, I know that there are some Christians who are so insecure that when something happens, and maybe all of us do this, what did I do to deserve this? See, they want to find some kind of reason.
Reminds me of a story from my high school days, Alden. And Jen, a friend of mine and I were dismissed from a classroom because he asked me a question out loud. And there was bedlam in the classroom, and the teacher happened to look up and see us in conversation. He threw us out of the class, sent us down to the principal.
Oof.
And that was a culture that allowed corporal punishment. The hickory stick was in use. And we went to the principal's office with this note, with instruction we're not to come back till we had a note from the principal. So in conversation with the principal, he quizzed us, and he said, well, he says, we could take care of this right now. He says, you could each have 4 strikes with the cane, and we'll call it a day. Well, we were not guilty of what we were charged, and so we professed our innocence and said, no, we're not going to take that. So he said, well, then you'll have to do 4 hours of hard labor. You have to clean all the windows on the library. And so professing our innocence, he gave us a week to do that. Professing our innocence, we decided not to do it, thinking that people would forget. And so a week went by, and a week and a day went by. The week went by, and the teacher didn't say anything about it, so we were back in class. But the day after that, the 8th day, he asked us if we'd done our work, and we said no. So he threw us out again. And I remember the sense of umbrage. We went down to the principal again. And actually, we did not go down to the principal again because this happened at the end of class. And my friend decided to speak with the teacher. And when the teacher came out, we were in the hallway and we got into this pretty straight talk with the guy. And he finally said, oh, let's just forget about the whole thing. And my friend said, no, we can't forget about the whole thing because the principal is involved here. But I just remember the umbrage, the rancor in our souls when we were going to be punished for something that we had not for an infringement that had not occurred. You know, so I don't know. Maybe I'm with Job here a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, the sense of injustice. I remember vividly this day when I was taking a class in seminary. And the teacher made the mistake. He was a teacher of Calvin and reflected Calvin's philosophy in a number of ways. But he made the mistake of giving a test with short answers so that you could tell whether the answers were right or wrong. You know, if you want to be subjective, then give an essay test, then you can do what you want. But he gave short answers. And when I got my test back, I had a B, and I was very competitive. And I looked at some of the answers, and some of my answers were correct. But they'd been marked wrong. So I checked my neighbors. They had, in some instances, the wrong answers that were not marked wrong.
And some of the ones that you were marked wrong on that were right, they
yeah.
had right.
So I thought it was, you know, go tell the teacher. And I went and showed the teacher, and he got angry. He questioned the judgment of the teacher. So being the kind of nasty guy that I am, I asked my colleagues if I could borrow their tests, take the names out, and go and show them the evidence. See. They reluctantly agreed.
That didn't help you, I bet. I bet that didn't help you.
No, in fact, it made matters worse. I went to the teacher, and he says, "You've questioned my integrity. We must go see the dean." And so we went to see the dean, and the dean, of all things, sided with the teacher. So I got a B, and my friends got A's. You know, the
you
sense
should have
of
gotten a C for misbehaving.
For challenging the teacher.
That would have been retributive
yeah.
justice.
That's right.
See? Absolutely.
In an authoritarian system, that's mm-hmm. what happens. You mm-hmm. challenge, and you know, conference presidents, when his will is challenged, he'll send the guy, when I was pastoring in Southern California, you got banished to the desert. Pastor Banning in Beaumont, way out in the sticks, you see. So it's that sense of unfairness. And what Job has here is a real sense of unfairness. And he claims to be innocent, see.
Yeah, but he's not wrong in that.
No, he's absolutely right, see.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it doesn't fit their paradigm. See,
yeah.
They think if you're suffering, it's because you're a sinner.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, what I've done is to take, first of all, I think it's important that we look at the two different kinds of innocence. There is a kind of innocence that only Jesus had, no taint, see. But then there,
which was an innocence, now how would you describe that innocence?
Untainted by any kind of evil.
Okay, so no, it would not be that of a human, ordinary human. Mm-hmm.
This would be like Adam before the fall.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Okay, so he was a truly innocent person, see. But mm-hmm. there's only one of a kind like that.
Yeah.
None of the rest of us are innocent in that way. Then another innocent person that you have in Scripture is Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
At least there's no recorded sin. Now, we wouldn't say he was innocent the way Jesus was.
Yeah.
And it's really very intriguing when his colleagues there decided to get even with him. They tried to find a flaw with him, but they said, we can only find the only basis for charges this man has. We can't find it unless it has to do with the law of his God. See, and mm-hmm. so that's when they tricked Darius and so on. So Daniel is a model of innocence. Then the psalmists, and you have psalms of innocence, Psalm 17 and 26, the psalmist says, they've been beaten on me, and I don't deserve it, and I'm going to tell you, God. See, so. And that seems to be the case. You don't have to go and say, you shouldn't be praying that. I think we've been haunted too much by the prayer of the Pharisee and the publican.
Hmm.
The Pharisee and the publican, you know, the publican, I'm a sinner. And so many people think, you know, I've got to confess myself as a sinner. I must have done something bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
The opposite of that would be the sign of music. Somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done something good. Somewhere in my youth and childhood, I must have done something bad.
So why does this agitate you, Alden? I'm interested in this.
Because I think it's terribly important for people when they have been mistreated to be able to say so.
Oh, I see.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's what Job does. Now, there's one other name we could put on the list is Jeremiah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jeremiah is very interesting because he started to be patient.
He started to be patient.
He started out. And then all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
Now, I probably shouldn't do this in public on the radio, but one of the most vivid prayers of Jeremiah is Jeremiah chapter 19:19-23. Let me singe the airwaves with this just a little bit. And this, so you'll see what I mean here. He starts out innocent and then can't take it anymore. Please, Lord, answer my prayer. Make my enemies stop accusing me of evil. I tried to help them, but they are paying me back by digging a pit to trap me. I even begged you not to punish them. But now I am asking you to let their children starve and be killed or be killed in war. Let women lose their husbands and sons to disease and violence. These people have dug pits and set traps for me, Lord. Make them scream in fear when you send enemy troops to attack their homes. Mm-hmm. You know they plan to kill me, so get angry and punish them. Don't ever forgive their terrible crimes. So there's, he started out to be patient, but couldn't take it.
But, you know, I love that he didn't choose, nor did Job, to seek revenge on the people who gave inaccurate advice or who were pursuing them. Neither did King David.
I mean, they didn't seek revenge themselves.
Right, themselves. They were allowing God to have his good time and all of that.
And that is a huge step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go for an eye, for a tooth, or, you know, whack it off. But if I say, I'm going to, you know, I would love to bash your brains in, Jen, but I'm not going to. I'll leave that for the Lord.
Right.
See, that is a huge step in the right direction.
It doesn't make me feel very safe around you, but but it makes me understand that you believe God is more powerful.
Sure.
And that's good.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a good thing.
Now, in ordinary times today, one other question we need to raise is, what is the role of the demonic in attacking innocent people?
You have to explain that a little bit.
Satan attacked Job. Do we have that same thing happening today?
Oh, I think so.
Okay. Can you tell when?
Well, I mean, the one that I would interest me the most would be that when people who are living exemplary lives are suddenly beaten down, because I think they are victim. Well, they fall prey to the same deviousness of Satan as Job did. If Satan can sink the ship of a righteous person, he's done quite a bit.
Now, our time is going to run out. I wanted to focus on Romans 8:28. In all things, God works together with those who love him to bring about what is good. See, that's a shift from the NIV, straightforward reading, all things work together for good. I'm not enough of a Calvinist to say that's true. But to see God working in all things to bring about what is good, I think that's... That is a distinct possibility that I want to look for.
Yeah.
You know, even when I'm losing something, and I can give you chapter and verse because I lose lots of things. When I pray for the Lord to help me find my lost whatever, what he may do is simply saying, Thompson, you need to clean things up a bit. And when you have cleaned things up a bit, then I'll let you find it.
You'll find it.
So it may be tangential. So you have to look at what you can learn and all of those things, and I think that's really terribly important. Well, our time is up. Thank you, Jen and Dave, for helping us with this topic. Next week, we are going to talk about intimations of hope. My thanks to Jared Miller, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.